this is what we talk about in Aorta. It's not just about clear aligners, it's about bringing all multifaceted parts of dentistry together in a software platform that makes it more predictable, less risk adverse to our patients' care.
Welcome to the Dental Head Start podcast. I'm David Keir, and this episode's all about clear aligners with two of the most well-known general dentists in the field. We've got Dr. George Abdelmalek and Dr. John Hagliasis. But first, I want to talk a bit about an announcement we've got coming up. And I say we because we've had Dr. Bridget Wall working or helping us out with social media and for a long time, but I've finally twisted her arm to come and co-host a podcast with me. How are you today, Bridget?
I'm good, thanks, David. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And Bridget, of course, you've been working with us for a while, helping with social media and all the things in the background, but now we've actually got something pretty exciting, an announcement to share with our audience. So what have we got planned?
Well, so we've got a new podcast segment, which is pretty exciting. This one is a bit of a shorter format, and it's a podcast where we learn from people that have been there, have made the mistakes, and learn all the lessons that have allowed them to become the dentists that they are today. So it's going to be lots of really great tips that we can listen to and just take into work the next day.
Absolutely. And these are the things that Dental Head Start's all about, is learning those tips that you don't learn at dental school. And this is going to be shorter. A lot of people want a slightly shorter podcast. It's going to be weekly. And if you're a bit sick of my voice, you're going to hear Bridget's voice as well. We're going to be both hosting this podcast and sharing it as much as we can.
So yeah, the podcast is called What I Wish I Knew. And we've actually already started recording. We've got some really exciting and inspiring guests that we'll be talking to. We recorded the first episode yesterday, which is great. So we're going to start releasing the podcast weekly every Wednesday, and they're going to start coming out from May.
So that's just a couple of weeks. I can't wait to get that out there. It's very exciting. But right now we've got a podcast, of course, with Dr. John Hagliasis and George Abdelmalek. They're two amazing guys who are doing a lot of clear aligner work, and they're really bridging that gap between orthodontists and dentists and clear aligners and, you know, the general dentist who is not as experienced with that. So they do a lot of work through ACAS, Australasian Clear Aligner Society, which they founded, and Aorta Australia. John himself has done well over 3,000 cases. George is still a relatively young graduate, but he's really pushing the boundaries with this and making a big dent, I think, in Australian clear aligner competencies of dentists, which is amazing, and thank you to them for that. They packed this full of tips. We learn a lot about their story, how they got to where they are. We learn about incorporating clear aligners in the general dentist scenario and incorporating clear aligners as a new graduate, and how to start taking those steps to learning the important things you need to know to get into it. We talk a little bit about the future of orthodontics and what we expect to see over the next 10, 15, 20 years. And of course, we tie it in at the end with graduate tips and tricks to get you to where they have got to in their careers. Hang in there. After the feature interview, we've got the Prime Head Start segment. We're speaking with Patrick. And I'm also going to mention a little bit about the Prime Vision Conference, something that's coming up in June. It'll be online. It's packed with great speakers, quite a few you've actually heard of on the podcast. And it's going to help us survive this difficult time and thrive when we can go back to work after the COVID restrictions. And of course, thank you to Restoring Excellence, who've just rebranded as Ripe Global, and they're doing some amazing things for dentistry. I think we're going to hear a lot about them in the next few years to come, but they've already got a huge online platform that's worth checking out. You'll hear about that in a second. For now, enjoy the episode with Dr. John Hagliasis and George Abdelmalek. So welcome to the Dental Head Start podcast. Today we have two guests, and if you do clear aligners, then you certainly know these guys. We've got Dr. John Hagliasis and we've got George Abdelmalek. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, Dave. Pleasure to be here.
So, as I said, you know these guys if you do aligners. If you don't, well, these guys have organized and made the society, the Australasian Clear Aligner Society. And I was actually at the conference earlier this year, which was great. John does Aorta, which is involved in training for aligners and restorative. And they're both private practice practitioners, general dentists who have a focus in aligners. And I wanted to start very simply. I want to know, what's so exciting about aligners? Why do you guys spend so much time and effort focusing on that part of dentistry?
Good question, David. I guess I can probably start that. I mean, I got into clear aligners about 2005, 2006. I hated ortho, to be perfectly honest with you. When I graduated, I was a prosthodontist by heart, and I got into clear aligners as an alternative for, you know, veneers and restorative. I knew I wanted to provide my patients optimal choice and transparency, and I couldn't just be cutting teeth. So clear aligners became an obvious option to be able to provide patients choice and minimalist approach. So that's how my journey started. And never, ever imagined I'd be doing 4,000 plus cases with multiple systems, DIY aligners, since then. So it happened by mistake. We were focusing on a patient experience, six-star customer service, where we provided options. And that took us to some amazing heights, and clear aligners became an accidental event while we were trying to do other things and better things in dentistry.
You must have fallen in love with it to get so into it. So you started really early, 2005. Did you just decide you loved it after that?
No, I knew the technology was the future. I tell you what, I didn't love it at the start. It was painful. It was difficult. And there was no one there to help. I mean, I had to go overseas to learn. You know, when I remember being at the first and only Invisalign conference 2010 in Australia, where I was told, you're not welcome. This is the orthodontist didn't want it. So I had to go overseas and learn, but I learned out of necessity. We had this problem. It was popular. People wanted it. Patients wanted it. They were coming from all over Australia, and then we had to find a way. And then when I started seeing cases working that shouldn't have worked under any expectations, I knew this was it. And then that's where I was on this journey of scanning. We were one of the first in the world, uploading two scanners in 2011 when Align bought out iTero. And it transformed our practice. We went from 70 cases a year to 150 to 350, 400 a year. This is a general practice, 2 to 4 chairs to 8 chairs in a couple of years. So we had this daunting task of incorporating technology. Knowing what the patient wanted was important. That's why we got into clear aligners, and then having to systemize it. There was no rule book. We had to set it. And that sort of started this journey off with clear aligners, and then starting to see it happen and giving patients what they wanted. And there's nothing better in dentistry in not having to pick up a handpiece, a local anesthetic, and giving patients what they wanted, white and straight as smiles. It's been quite rewarding, but early on, I can tell you, I can assure you, it was hard.
Well, thank you for treading that path for many of us, I guess. George, tell us about your story. What's so exciting about aligners?
No, my journey is pretty simple. I joined Freedom with John, under John in, I think it was 2015. And I went in as a relatively fresh grad and doing a lot of general dentistry, but obviously John does a lot of clear aligners. I think at that stage he'd done, it would have been 2,000 cases by that stage, John. He was kind enough to mentor me and to introduce me to clear aligners and he didn't necessarily hide it from us. He turned around and said, these are clear aligners. If you want to join in, you can come in and learn. If you don't, you don't have to get involved. But being the person I am, I started saying, you know what, let's be involved if you're happy to mentor us. And then started seeing a lot of cases that really, really, well, it shocks you. It shocks you because you're continually taught that aligners can't do much, and we're continually taught throughout uni that aligners can't do anything other than little basic repositioning or to be used as an adjunct to braces right at the end of treatment. If you want to get the patient out of braces 2 or 3 months beforehand, you just put them into aligners for 2 or 3 months. But it was never something that was taught to do complete ortho. So I started seeing that, and I started seeing some crazy things. And to be honest with you, a lot of things worked. Some things didn't. I think we'll both agree with that one. And it was that part that interested me, was the why did things work, and why did a lot of things work, and why did some things not work. And that's when things started interesting me, and I started looking for the answers with John. And the more we looked, the more we realized that we don't have all the answers. And because we don't have all the answers, I think that's where our interests both peaked, and we turned around and said, well, let's try and find the answers, and let's try and find it together.
That's awesome. The scientist within you trying to find out the answers is a beautiful way, I think, to explore dentistry. George, tell us about, so you're a relatively new graduate at that time. Tell us about how did you get into dentistry? Just quick kind of background, and then how did you find yourself working with John?
Very quickly. Grew up to parents who migrated from Egypt in 74 or so, always put an emphasis on, you know, making sure that we go down the academic pathway, make sure we go down through education, and sacrificed a lot for us to give us the opportunities to do that. graduated, finished year 12, applied to a few unis, ended up getting into physiotherapy at La Trobe in Bundoora, did a year there, did okay, did pretty well, and did an internal transfer to La Trobe Dentistry in Bendigo. Did the 5 years there, and it was one of the best things I did. And then once I graduated, got into a scholarship program for my first year afterwards, that had a full-time mentor, and that was in Albury-Wodonga. And right after that, I applied to Freedom Dental, happened all by chance, and very lucky I did. It was one of the best things that happened to me, because it really did change my career trajectory, and really set up where I am today, and really gave me friends that I'll never forget.
Yeah, it's funny how these decisions and then situations can change our entire trajectory. Obviously, meeting John and getting into Clear Aligners has definitely changed things for you. John, tell us, you've got a bit more experience than George and I, so tell us about your story and how did you always want to do dentistry? How'd you end up where you are?
I've got to say, before I go into that, I've got to tell a story how George came to our practice. Because I've interviewed hundreds of clinicians over the years. But George is a unique situation. My uncle, who's let's call him the black sheep of the family, he's an electrician, he does a bit of part-time work at the practice, constantly giving me resumes of people, receptionists, nurses, you've got to interview this person. On this one day, it was about this time 5 years ago, George, I reckon it was, I get a resume for a dentist. What are you talking about, Andrew? You got a resume for a dentist? Fine, let me get him in. So I interviewed, not expecting someone of the caliber of George. So it was one of those stories that you would not have expected. I didn't expect anything from it. I interviewed it more as a favour to my uncle. But as it turned out, it was the best decision, one of the best decisions I ever did in recruiting a clinician. It's one of those bizarre stories you would not have expected.
I might add a supplementary story to the. I don't think you actually remember this, John. But when I went into my interview, John did the interview over two stages. First stage was I met with the practice manager. John was too busy, didn't come in because he was running 45 minutes late, and he just told the practice manager to get rid of me. He told the practice manager to get rid of me, so he said, I'll bring him in. And I heard him on the phone say to the practice manager, I don't have time, just tell him to come in another time. After I sat there for 45 minutes. So then I came in the week after, and then John came, nice enough to interview me. It was nice of him. And we got it on because we both go for North Melbourne, and he was sharing a story with me about North Melbourne in the rooms, a famous place, allegedly. But then it was interesting because John, he uses the same interview questions for everyone. But I'll tell you the interview question that one of them that he came out with me. He goes, if a patient's lost a front tooth, what are your options do you offer him? And he said that to me. He said, if your patient's lost a front tooth, what option do you offer him? Now, I had come back from a scholarship program that was mainly in public. So I said, oh, yep, I'll offer him a suck down. And he goes, okay. And he goes, what else would you offer him? I go, I'd offer him a denture. And he goes, oh, okay. And he goes, what else would you offer him? I go, oh, and I sat there for a bit and I go, oh, you know what? Maybe I'd offer him an implant. And he goes, okay. And then he goes, so if it was your family member, if it was your mum that lost her front tooth, what would you offer him? And I go, oh, it would be an implant. And he goes, what would be the best thing for it? I go, oh, it would be an implant. And he goes, so why did you offer the patient a suck down than a denture and maybe an implant if you were going to offer your mum an implant straight away? And I go, and I walked out of there, and I remember being on the phone with my siblings. And I said, oh, they go, how'd you go in the interview? And I go, oh, it's tough, don't worry. I'll have to look for a different job. There's no way this is going to go through. And for some reason, he took the punt on me. So there you go. Thank you. Thank you. You probably don't remember.
Yeah, look, and that's the question I ask, because it's amazing. I think it's the mindset, because our philosophy at our practice is, whether it's a junior nurse, receptionist, or a general clinician, is you treat the patient like it's your family and friend. That reception area is the living room. So we are there working collectively for our family and friends and our greater community. So if a patient comes in, you don't make an assumption, you don't assume they can't afford, you provide them the best possible care and let them make the choice. And that's, I guess, how my journey started. I didn't like the way dentistry, I graduated in 98, I did a year in UQ, 95, and then transferred, did well enough and transferred back into Melbourne. So I only did a four-year degree. I did a year of science at Melbourne in 95, 94, transferred into the UQ's program, did well and got back into Melbourne. And it was a big difference between UQ and Melbourne. UQ, they were dealing with problem-based learning with Prof. Aldred and Andrew Forrester, those that remember UQ. And I wasn't looking at doing dentistry. I was trying to get into optometry at the time. Dentistry was my second option, believe it or not. And after doing the science subjects in optometry at Melbourne, I didn't get in, but for some reason I got into Melbourne. And within a day or two, I was on a plane up there and I thought, let's give it a shot. But I fell in love with dentistry when I got introduced to problem-based learning. They were trying it for oral microbiology and anatomy with Alex Forrester and Prof. Aldred. And the problem-solving skills and abilities in trying to resolve the diagnosis or the problems patient, I fell in love with that process. So I had an amazing year in 95 at UQ. I got back to Melbourne in 96 with family and friends, and then I saw the stark difference. Melbourne Uni, 1950s mentality, doctor knows best. It was a shock, a cultural shock to what I experienced at UQ. And, you know, graduated in 98, did well. One of the prosthodontists offered me a job before I graduated in his practice, but I was determined to do dentistry differently. You know, I was blue collar, parents, working class, didn't like the way dentistry was done. And I thought it was a better way of transparency and providing the patient's choice. It's the patient's smile, it's the patient's mouth after all. So that started my journey of this patient focus of wants versus needs. And that's why I got into clear aligners. So that was the key. So I got into private practice pretty much before I graduated, was working anywhere from half a dozen practices in my first year, literally 6 days a week. I was all over Melbourne. I just wanted experience. I wanted diversity. And I wanted to build, in my mind, what was the ideal dental practice. So that took me from all corners of Melbourne, public sector as well as private. And then I got an opportunity to work in a inner city practice. It was high end. I started there doing emergency and then eventually bought into the associate, then eventually bought the whole practice out. And the funny story about North Melbourne is the associate who I was working with used to be the ex-president of the VFL and North Melbourne, a guy named Dr. Alan Aylett. He's still alive. Unfortunately, I've heard recently he's in a nursing home. But this guy was a visionary for those that know VFL. He was a professional athlete, played North Melbourne in the 50s. He was a dentist at the same time. He then took the VFL and introduced colour TV, grand finals live, made it national competition. He was doing this at the practice. He was getting death threats in the 80s when he took South Melbourne to Sydney. He was doing dentistry in one room and the back office was boardroom meeting. So I was fortunate to be mentored by someone who just, you know, was passionate about what he did, about football and dentistry, and really did something amazing. And I was in an ability to see that customer service and take it to that next level. So that was my experience, and that's the journey I've been on. And that's how Clear Aligners, you know, got into that mix.
It's really interesting. The people, the mentors we get can really shape us. And John, to be honest, the way I see you is that you're, you know, flying with dentistry, working really hard, but at the same time, you've got all these other things on the side. And when I met you at ACAS, I know you're focused, let me put it that way, which I'm impressed by. I want to take a big step back to what you were talking about, though, and George was talking about the options we provide for our patients and the way we think about dentistry. John, how did you learn what you now know? How did you get the mindset that you now have?
So it evolves. I had a vision before I graduated that I saw what I saw in the public sector as we learn as students, I didn't like. It didn't agree with me. I didn't like. So I took the opinion and the view that I wanted to change the way it was done. And I focused on what the patient wanted. I wanted that 6-star customer service, what the hotel industry does, what the airline industry was. I knew communication was the key. But what I was seeing was clinicians would give their biased opinion. You go to a butcher, they're not going to sell you vegetables, they're going to sell you meat. And I think dentistry has that tainted view, because we know clinicians will go to three or four clinicians and get three or four opinions. And to me, that's not in the best interest of the patient. So we can all argue different perspective, but bottom line, in this day and age in particular, we need to give the patient the choice. and put them first. So it evolved with time. There was trial and error. It didn't always work. When you give patients choice, they would often, you know, want it all. But when something goes wrong, it still ends up your fault. But it was it rang true to me. It was part of my why, my going to bed at night, feeling I did the best I could based on how I felt. The dentistry, the technique was a secondary issue. I built a team around me that could diversify the care. I don't do implant surgery. I'm not interested in doing implant surgery, but it is the optimal treatment modality for a missing tooth. So I have clinicians that work where we complement the services we can provide for our patients. So it evolved with time, but it started with how I envisaged I wanted to do dentistry.
The first thing that we do really well is, well, the thing in dentistry that we do is we always promote the things that we know really well, and we don't promote the things that we don't know really well. So the first thing that I would suggest to the listeners would be to either train yourself up to a lot of things, number one, or to everything, or number two, have a team around you that is happy to do everything, or have a team. It doesn't have to be in your clinic, but a team that you treat as your internal providers or internal specialists that you will refer to, because then you won't shy away from offering the options, because we only offer options that we're comfortable with, and we don't offer options that we're not comfortable with. So either become comfortable with all the options, or have a team around you that can provide all the options, because then that barrier is gone. The second barrier that is there is cost. And I think John will talk about this in a second, but one thing that we don't do is John, when I first walked into Freedom, the first thing that John said is, we don't discuss cost in the surgery. He goes, that cost will be sat down and be discussed with the patient in a consult room, and it'll be done in a professional manner. It doesn't necessarily have to be by you. It can be by you if you want to, but it doesn't have to be by you, but we'll discuss cost out of the surgery, because when you're in the surgery, you should be there discussing with the patient what is best with them and then give them options from there, not discussing cost. You shouldn't be the person who's sitting there discussing costs in surgery. And I think those two things, A, having a team around you that does everything, and number two, not discussing costs in the surgery and you being the clinician rather than the salesperson, are the two things that really allow that vision to continue to prosper.
Can you explore that a bit more for us, John, the concepts around that, the cost discussion?
Yeah, look, I think it's something that as we exploded as a practice, going from two to four to eight chairs within a couple of years, my role was to be the leader and ensure that we had the systems in place that no matter who the patient was seeing in any of the eight surgeries, the consistency of customer service and transparency was the same. And that was a massive challenge. So when a patient came in, they were quoted, and if that 533 turned into a 534, we quoted a 533, and that's what the quote remained. That was the concept and the principle. So what we found was it was a lot easier to set up a system in place of a non-professional staff member dealing with contracts, consent forms, and logistics and costs and payment plans than having to train clinicians to do something that's not naturally part of what they do. Now, we systemized the dental model, so we weren't interested in clinicians who were good with numbers and salespeople. We were interested in clinicians that could work as part of a team approach, focus on what they did best, internally refer services they could do. We had a SAC protocol, so clinicians self-evaluated what they were good at and ensured there were lead clinicians within our team in certain areas, whether it was endodontics, oral surgery, clear aligners, aesthetics, and so on. So clinicians who were starting with us as a graduate had the ability to improve their skill set they were comfortable with, but it came down to the patient experience. It's like Virgin or Qantas Airlines. When you go on that plane, you don't pick the pilot. You just assume you're going to get to Melbourne to Sydney, right? So same as our practice, the patient wants their smile enhanced, get out of pain. We will pick and choose the clinicians that will suit that patient's journey experience. So the payment plan is not the clinician's responsibility. Their responsibility and skill set is to do dentistry. So that was the mindset shift that we do. And it's been hard. We've got clinicians that didn't like or appreciate what we're trying to do, each to their own. But that was the purpose. The premise of that philosophy is that how do we optimize a patient experience?
Yeah, and I think you were probably quite potentially pioneering at the time, bringing that concept of hotel or airline service into dentistry. But it served you extremely well. You were, when you started in 2011, through the next couple of years, you're on the top 100 growth list. Is that right?
Yeah. So I've been there since 2002, and we renamed it Freedom in 2011. But our accountant got us to nominate for Business Review Weekly's fastest 100 businesses in Australia. And we made that list based on 7 years of consecutive growth at 40% average, a year on year revenue growth in one practice. So we were there with some amazing startups that you see today, but we were the, I think, one of two healthcare industries in 2011 and 2012. So that was based on an average of accountant audited figures of growth, averaging, I think it was 39% 1 year, 41% the other year over a 6 or 7 year period. And that was before we actually got into aligners, but that was based on that philosophy, that patient-focused philosophy back then.
Yeah, that's impressive stuff, and congratulations. I'm sure that would have been a lot of hard work, and clearly your vision and systems is really what got you there. Of course, you know, actually, I want to go back to something quickly, George, with you. You're obviously a much more recent graduate, and we're thinking about your pathway from dentistry to now where you are. What advice do you have for graduates in them finding their first job and going on from there?
I think the first bit of advice that I have for graduates is don't undersell yourself. You go through a tough slog for 5 years or 4 years in the postgrad program to get there. So take a lot of pride in what you do, but in the same time, don't walk out thinking that you're God's gift to dentistry either, because as a general rule, you're not. You can generally walk out with having done 3 or 4, and I teach at La Trobe, so I'm constantly talking to final year dental students, but you walk out with 2-3 root canal treatments under your belt, or 2-3 crowns. Generally speaking, the boss that you're applying to does 2 or 3 crowns by the morning session of that day that you're about to interview for. So you're not God's gift to dentistry, but you should be going in with an attitude rather than your skill set, because you're going to be picked on your attitude rather than your skill set. So get ready to show what your attitude is. And that attitude is one of getting ready for teamwork if you're going into a team practice, getting ready, and especially if you want to go into a mentoring practice, you have to be in a team environment. Because if you're walking into a practice that has one dentist, you're generally going to get the mentoring of that one dentist. And yes, you might get external mentoring, but it doesn't help you in that clinical day-to-day mm-hmm. aspect. So if you're going to go into a bigger practice, you're going to have to get ready for to have a team attitude, but also an attitude to learn, and also an attitude to, yes, you might have to do the hard yards at the start, but it's going to pay off at the end. And get ready, not so much to sacrifice anything, but to get ready to put in the hard yards, because it will pay off, because everyone that gets there doesn't get there easily. They get there by putting in the hard yards when they're younger, when they've got more enthusiasm. And once you've grown and developed, you'll be able to get there easier. There's no point going into a practice that all you're doing is scale and cleans, because in 10 years' time, all you'll be doing is scale and cleans. But if you go into a practice where you're starting off, yes, might not be doing all the complex works, but you're slowly building up to that. By the time you are good and comfortable with dentistry, you're going to be at that level that you're going to be able to mentor the next person.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. All of those points are fantastic. I particularly like the way you described attitude being the key thing that you're going to be hired on, which is totally true. I'm sure, John, you agree with that. And it's your attitude as you come out that, you know, some people I think trip up on, to be honest. Great points. So, guys, over the years, you've both been obviously doing a lot of aligner work. John, in particular, 4,000 cases plus as a general dentist is amazing. You then together formed ACAS, Australasian Clear Aligner Society. Tell us about the vision, the birth of that, and how and what that has become now.
Yeah, look, I think it was something that as we started end of 2017 creating Aorta, and we thought, you know, we wanted to share the systems and the communication skill set and technology integrated to general dentist and how clear aligners could be such an important part, but we knew it was overwhelming. And we're quite fortunate in Australia with such amazing groups teaching orthodontics, from, you know, Dr. Mahoney to the POS group to Dr. Vandana with BOSS and Dr. Hall and I'm sure I've forgotten a few, but we knew that with the advent of multiple aligner systems coming in, that it was important as a profession. We created a non-for-profit society to ensure that the principles and fundamentals of clear aligners, they're universal, and then we should learn autonomously and impartially. That was the premise. So in 18, I was on the way to an aligner conference in Singapore. I spoke to George. He said, yep, let's do it. Spoke to Dr. Gus Vivaldi in Sydney and Steve Saman from Gold Coast, who I'd met over many years in the aligner conferences in Asia. And we said, I've got this idea. I know it started happening in Europe and Asia. You know, what do you think? Because it's never been done before. Having dentists and orthodontists in the same room learning together has never been done before. They made it clear to me a decade earlier it was never going to happen. But to be able to do it in that first year on the Gold Coast, despite a cyclone, having a sellout, and then in Sydney, it was incredible. And I think George and I had a chance to sort of sit back and realize what we had done, but have heads of school, Prof. Ali and Tony Weir, legends in clear aligners globally, let alone in Australia, be in the same room discussing clear aligners as a group, impartially, and ensuring we're empowering our own profession. I think it was the perfect storm, given Smile Direct Club, given this whole space changing where clear aligner companies are promoting and marketing directly to our patients. There was fear and intimidation, but we came together and galvanized it. So that's how it started. You know, we wanted to create this entity that would help mentor, educate, provide support, innovate. We're proud now that we've got to a point now we're going to now invest back money to institutions, universities to spend time in doing research and development autonomously for our members and for the public on clear aligners. We want to make sure Australia is leading the world in education and clear aligner research. So that's how it started.
I'll add to that, Dave. And I'm not sure how long you've been doing clear aligners for, Dave, either. But when I first started looking for education, the only education that was around at the time was company-sponsored education. And to be honest with you, it's simply not good enough, because company-sponsored education is verbatim that countries want to spew out to you. And that's completely fine. We need that as a supplementary thing, but it shouldn't be the core way that dental practitioners learn. Now, if you look at the history of clear aligners, the way it came about was most things in dentistry come in through reps. You do a bit of education on it, and then you start doing it in your practice. Or you learn at university, you start doing it in your practice. What happened with clear aligners that completely shifted everything and turned everything upside down was the company Invisalign started advertising to consumers. And then consumers came in asking the dentist or the orthodontist to do a certain treatment for them. You never see VDW or ProTaper advertised direct to consumers, and they're going to come into the endodontist and say, oh, I want you to use ProTaper on me. But what Invisalign did was completely shifted it. And they said, no, we're going to go straight to consumers. We're going to advertise to them. They're going to go into their providers. So then what happened was all of a sudden our whole profession was on the back foot. You will be sitting in your practice and a patient will come into you and say, I want to be treated by Invisalign. So all of a sudden all the dentists and orthodontists were scrambling trying to find education. And because it happened that way, it happened so quickly, the profession didn't necessarily have time to get everything ready to educate themselves on. So what happened was all of the education came from companies. Now, we know that some company-driven education will generally always paint the company in a good light. And why that's dangerous is because we're not here to be company spokesmen. We're here to be clinicians, and we're here to be physicians as well. So we have to be able to learn what works and what doesn't work, and we have to be able to learn that without any pressure otherwise put onto us, and we have to be able to learn that honestly and be able to have options given to us so we know when to use things, why to use things, and when not to use things, and why not to use it.
Absolutely. And you raise a really good point, which is the fact that there is always a bias if it's a sponsored event. And I think, we now have a number of people teaching to general dentists, so some orthodontists and, of course, some general dentists teaching orthodontics to general dentists. But that's always been a very controversial topic. Do you guys have anything to mention on that, I guess, the fact that you're able to get orthodontists, some world-renowned orthodontists in the same room teaching general dentists who perhaps in the past that would not happen. Is that relationship issue breaking down? Is it getting better? Or are we still, as general dentists, seen by most orthodontists to be doing something we shouldn't be doing?
Do you want to go on that, George? Or do you want me to?
No, I'll go on it. I don't think, I think with anything we do, there's always going to be different types of people. I think the generalization of orthodontists not wanting to teach general dentists, we can't necessarily make, because at that stage, what we're doing is we're lumping people into categories. It's a bit like saying all general dentists want to rip a patient off. So to lump people into categories, I don't think works. There are always going to be some people that don't necessarily want to teach others, whether they be a general dentist not wanting to teach a general dentist, whether it be a periodontist not wanting to teach somebody else. So we're fortunate to the fact that the people that we have approached were keen. We're world leaders, but we're open to education because they saw the passion and the vision that we both had, and they bought into the vision of a united profession is a stronger profession rather than a divided profession. And because of that, we were able to transcend the barriers of profession, of different specialties, subspecialties, and we're able to bring people together. Now, there's always going to be some education that can't be taught to the same people in the same room. And you saw that at ACAS 2020, how we tried to differentiate it into different complexities, because at the end of the day, there are going to be different complexities, but they're not going to be complexities based on grouping certain people into subgroups, but instead to say it's based on your experience. So there's always going to be a difference in what we can educate people, because at the end of the day, specialists generally will have a lot more knowledge in a certain field than general dentists who are doing more general things. At the same time, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that together we'll all learn more, and that's what these orthodontists that came and taught us. And to be honest with you, a really experienced general dentist who came and taught us. So people like Dr. Jeff Coe that came in and taught us, and many other general dentists who said, you know, I'll put my hand up to teach them. What we were talking about earlier with clear aligners is it is a relatively new field. So there are some orthodontists who haven't done any clear aligners. There are some orthodontists who have done a very few number of clear aligners. And there are some general dentists who have done a lot, a bit like John. So what we've done is we turned around and said, well, we're not going to label you dentist, orthodontist, periodontist, so on. We're going to turn around and say, this is where your level of experience is, because it is a new field. And I think that's how we were able to transcend that barrier as well.
Really well said. And it's a really good point that we're, lumping people into categories is not the way we should be looking at any of this, and with the training as well. Great answer. You mentioned, I guess, as a united profession, we're a stronger profession. Are you talking in reference to Smile Direct Club and other things like that?
Yeah, look, I think that applies to Smile Direct Club. It applies to some 15 aligner manufacturers that were at ACAS and many more coming. I think the reality is we need to be a united front, whether you're a dentist, orthodontist, OHT, passionate about clear aligners. I think the point is we're not in competition with each other. We shouldn't be divided. We should be united in what's the best interest for our patients. And I think, you know, no different to, like Dr. George said about root canal or implant brands, you as a clinician have the right to choose what's best to serve the patient, whether it's combining it with fixed and clear aligners or just clear aligners. But we need to learn. I think the question I get asked a lot is, how do I learn about clear aligners? And there isn't a course. You need to learn from as many people as you can, because no one's got it right. And I hear these courses all the time saying, you've got to go to this course, got to go to that course, got to go overseas. At the end of the day, there's no clinician on this planet that has it right. Invisalign themselves don't have it right yet. We are all still learning. And I can tell you now, every 3 to 6 months, I'm changing my preferences, because there are things that I've done, I've looked back on, and I thought, well, no, that didn't work. I need to change. So as clinicians, we need to keep learning. And what better way than doing it collectively to learn from each other and open it up, right?
Definitely. Do you think Do you think these direct-to-consumer brands are going to have a foothold in the market, or do you think this is a risk to dentists?
I think it's an opportunity. I think at the end of the day, whether you think they should or shouldn't, it's irrelevant. The consumer decides. There's a million cases now, I think, the US and globally. They're not going away. And if they go away, they'll go away because the consumer decides they're going to go away, or the consumer decides. That sales. Like with whitening, when I first started, you know, whitening was frowned upon by our profession, and clinicians would say it doesn't work, but it does work. And now we've got beauty therapists doing it and a whole host of online products. So it's not going to go away. So we have to accept that it's there, and it's going to provide a base product for those that can't afford it. But guess what? These patients aren't going to be satisfied with their end result and will then come back to us. We need to be equipped and skilled in how to develop the software, irrespective of the brand you're going to use, and be able to better advise these patients. No different to those patients who buy whitening toothpaste and say, I bought this toothpaste. I'm still not happy with the color of my teeth. You don't undermine that patient's choice by saying, well, you're stupid for buying that whitening toothpaste. It was never going to work. You talk them through about what you can now do. So it's an opportunity. The biggest free kick we've had in our profession is the companies like Smile Direct Club spending something like $5 million a week at one stage in the Australian market promoting to our patients what we can do better, right? This is a golden opportunity. You either look at it as a proactive approach, or you sit there and fear, like a taxi driver compared to an Uber driver. We need to be progressive and understand there is a place for this, and that we need to pick up the pieces and continue it on for the patient's optimal care.
That's such a wonderfully positive way to look at it, and I think it all makes perfect sense. And if we look at market trends in any business or anything, these things do crop up. And in our situation, if we can do it better and we can deal with the problems that come up, it doesn't hurt that they're marketing and telling everyone what we can do. It's a great point. George, do you have anything to add on that?
No, I think John covered it well. I think at the end of the day, we just have to remember that we strongly believe that we can provide a better service. And if we can strongly believe we can provide a better service, we should be telling the patients that. We should be showing the patients that. But more importantly, we shouldn't be owning the patient's decision. A patient that wants to go to a direct-to-consumer club, a direct-to-consumer aligner, we shouldn't be owning their decision. We're not responsible for their decision. Our responsibility lays in trying to show them what we can do. But at the end of the day, if they pick it, that's their decision. We just have to be able to turn and say, look, we support you as a patient. We don't support your decision. And if at any time you want us to help in any way, just let us know. Because at the end of the day, people will come back. Some people won't, but some people will. And you have to leave that door open. You shouldn't be shutting that door when a patient says to you, I want to go to a direct-to-consumer aligner, because at the end of the day, if you shut that door, it's not opening back up. But if you leave the door open, there's every chance that they will come back to you. Similarly, as Dr. John said, at the end of the day, if a company is marketing that much to you, that much to our industry, we should take advantage of it and start preparing our clinics, and especially the clinics that haven't started looking at clear aligners, to start looking at clear aligners, because they're only going to make clear aligners more popular and more prevalent in society. Probably the one risk that I see with it is if patients go through direct-to-consumer aligners and don't get a good result, they might associate clear aligners with not working. And I think that's a big concern for us. And I think that we need to, as a profession, start talking about clear aligners that work instead of fighting and saying clear aligners don't work. We should start fighting and saying clear aligners do work. The differentiation between it is a doctor-driven clear aligner versus a direct-to-consumer clear aligner, because the worst thing that can happen is one of our prospective patients to go through a direct-to-consumer aligner group, go through it, find out it didn't work, and then lump clear aligners as the product that doesn't work, as opposed to direct-to-consumer clear aligners that don't work. So we just have to keep driving that message, I think, because that's where I think is the biggest threat, where they'll taint the image of clear aligners rather than tainting the image of direct-to-consumer clear aligners.
That's a really good point based on what you're saying about collegiality. Well, getting the profession together, the united front, that's a good point. I actually hadn't thought of that myself. I also like what you said about, you know, supporting the patient's decision. And I think communication is really important when we're new graduates or students, and understanding that in the end it doesn't matter. Well, it shouldn't matter what the patient chooses, as long as you support them and they have all the options and they understand their choice. And leaving the door open after they make that choice is really important. We actually had a question which leads into this, and this was on our Facebook group from Dan Marianowski. He's actually on the podcast just a few episodes ago. He asked, what are your opinions on where clear aligners are headed? Will the algorithms get so good that treatment plans are made totally via AI technology? What's the future?
Look, I think there has been a lot of debate on this in the last couple of years, especially with the likes of dental monitoring coming into the space as well. I think that's a significant risk. I mean, if I was Align or Clear Correct and Straumann or Dentsply with their product, I'd be wanting to ensure that I could create a product that was independent of clinicians. So I think our challenge as clinicians is to understand and control this software from the optimal facial aesthetic possibilities for our patient, rather than handing over this resource, because it is something that I think will take time for AI to develop, because it's such a personal thing, you know, developing a smile, no different to veneers. It's a personal approach, whether it's color, shape, and contour. So I think there is a threat, and the more we can learn and not outsource that service, even now, there are products out there that outsource the ability for the software not to be in our domain. I think it's a mistake. And the more of that we do, the less control we're going to have in providing patients optimal care. George, what do you think on that?
Will AI take over us? The answer is probably yes. Will it happen soon? The answer is probably not. These companies need to collect a lot of data for this to happen. And one of the worst decisions that one of the companies did was they didn't collect the finished product. And because they didn't collect the finished product, they don't have as much information as we think they do. And the information that they do have, they haven't gone through all of that information, because this is a lot of information that they need to go through. And at the end of the day, biology will dictate a lot of the treatment that is ongoing. And you just have to sit down in one of our troubleshooting lectures or somebody else's troubleshooting lecture to understand that the AI isn't there. The AI won't be there for a long time. Will it improve? Yes, but it's going to be a constant improvement. Not in our lifetime. I wouldn't have thought that the AI will be that perfect that we won't need any doctor input.
But I think, just adding on to that, I think the next frontier from my perspective is the implementation, a complete turnkey software that implements the CBCT scan, the intraoral scan, and has a software so sophisticated that it can prepare what the patient's end result is, any occlusal rehab case, multiple implants, because combining prosthodontics, oral surgery, and orthodontics is the key. So this software exists. There are app developers already working on how a CBCT scan could be integrated into the movements and algorithms of tooth movements to optimize implant placement, as well as reducing the risk of recession and risks with orthodontic treatment that we know occur. So technology is going to better service our patients. We need to be jumping on that train and making sure that we are driving it in the direction that best suits our patients, rather than being disempowered in that end result. So this is what I'm excited about, because it really combines the best of prosthodontics, orthodontics, facial aesthetics, implantology. It's all there. We need to use these skill sets and software. And I don't think it's just the clear aligner software that's the key, but in my hands, it's been the integral part of multiple or multidisciplinary treatment plans. And I think as long as they continue to merge together, this is the future of our profession. So it's not just about clear aligners. And this is what we talk about in Aorta. It's not just about clear aligners. It's about bringing all multifaceted parts of dentistry together in a software platform that makes it more predictable, less risk adverse to our patients' care.
I can't wait for that. That's a really exciting concept to me. And you guys are obviously digitally interested, I guess. But let's be honest, it's really just CAD. Computer-aided design, I guess, and most professions have been through that 15 years ago. So in a way, we're catching up. But it's definitely the future. There's no doubt about that. And you mentioned, George, they didn't have the final result. Does that mean with scanners now they probably do?
I think they're going to start getting a lot closer. I think they now, as I said, we're now in the era where they're going to start realizing how important that information is. And once they realize how important that information is, they'll start utilizing it better. So I think we are going to be on that path of trying to get things automated. I think the very simple cases, and I use that word lightly, will be relatively automated. But we have to forget that not every canine route is going to look and be the same size. When we're looking at a simulation, we're looking at the crowns moving. We're not looking at the roots moving. And every single bit of biology is why we need a practitioner involved. And Prof. Ali, who was there at ACAS 2020, he actually wrote a really good article, and I think the title of it was "Clear Aligners: a thinking person's appliance." And he goes through why there needs to be someone behind the Clear Aligner software rather than either a computer or a person who's not dentally trained.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's so much more that goes into it than just what they even get in the scan.
One thing that I did hear, and I can't remember who it was an American orthodontist, I think we heard when John and I were in Vegas, and he said, I'm happy for you to always quote me about anything I say about clear aligners, but whenever you quote me, make sure you date me as well, because this area is moving so quickly. And because this area is moving so quickly, I might be made a fool in a couple of years' time when they start crunching all these numbers and everything is AI. But I think at this stage, what we know now, we're probably quite a while away from it being completely automated. It will get better, but completely automated probably a while away.
Yeah, I think we have the advantage, and we need to make sure we are learning and collaborating together, because I think it could be taken from us at any time with AI and the rate of change is going to happen.
One of the other perspectives, though, is with AI, we will get more reliable patient outcomes as well, particularly for the people who are not as experienced in aligners, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I guess I want to kind of pivot over into that. And you guys do a lot of training for people using aligners across all different systems. And you must see a lot of people very early in their journey. And I want to ask a few questions around that. What mistakes do you see people making at the start?
Oh, where do we start? I've made the mistakes. I think it is that learning curve, that Kruger-Dunn, graph, right, where we all come out and initially you get a few good cases under your belt and you think, how easy is this? I sit in front of a computer all day. And then you start getting problems, posterior open bites, laterals that won't rotate or extrude, and then you're stuck. I think it's what we often find is the diagnosing and then the treatment planning that's always fundamental in any aspect of dentistry, especially with clear aligners, is why, what are you trying to treat and why are you trying to treat it, and are you dealing with the cause? And I think when you break that down, that's where people fall apart, is their inexperience in those areas and knowing. So trying to get this, show them and share them our mistakes, I think is part of the way we can help. But ultimately, until you make a mistake, like with anything we do in dentistry, until you've fractured that file, until you've had that root that you can't remove, you learn the hard way. And I think it's no different to any part of our journey as clinicians in learning from our mistakes.
I'm gonna just jump into that. I think I completely agree with what Dr. John just said. The first mistake that everybody makes two mistakes that people make is either not enough emphasis on the software or not enough emphasis on the patient. Because at the end of the day, and John always used to say this to me, he goes, George, you can sit there doing 4 or 5 hours worth of software for one patient and your software can be absolutely perfect, but if the patient doesn't wear it, it's not going to work. And it's no difference to, we're both wearing glasses at the moment. If we take our glasses off, they're not going to work, not because the glasses don't work, but because we're not wearing them. And we have to get that through to the patient, because at the end of the day, one of the biggest fears in dentistry is letting go and providing and putting the treatment into the patient's hands, because all of a sudden our trust and our treatment effectiveness is all dependent on the patient, not so much on us. The second one is not putting emphasis on the software. I'm going to name drop two people here. The first one I'll talk about is our previous head of department at Ortho when I was going through at La Trobe, which his name was Dr. Rob Main. He essentially taught me to always be cynical and to always look up data and to always look up research papers and to question everything. And the second one would be Dr. Tony Weir, who we saw at ACAS, who is cynical and is very data-driven. And I think it's one of those two reasons that when we look at our software, we have to understand that there are guidance out there, there are training programs out there, but for you to believe what you see on the screen blindly would generally not serve you very well. Sometimes you might get lucky, but we're not in the industry and we shouldn't be treating patients hoping to get lucky. We should be treating patients knowing what we're doing. And that does mean training yourself up. And I think people either think it's too easy or they're lazy and don't want to train themselves, but it's the commitment. It's a lifelong commitment to find yourself a mentor like Dr. John was to me, but to find yourself a mentor and to get ready for lifelong commitment if you want to be any good at what you're doing. Because you have to learn about it. You have to go look at research or whatever research is out there about it, and you have to be cynical about it to get the best outcomes.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I guess it does go over into or any part of dentistry is if we're not focusing on it and learning and a lifelong journey of learning, we can't just hop into implants and start placing without really understanding it. But in aligners, some people tend to go along that path and do the course, whatever it is, accredited, and then they just hop in. And that's a dangerous path to take. And that we're not in the business, like you said, of getting lucky. I want to ask you, you say you share a few of your cases, you know, the mistakes you've made in the past. What are some of those key types of situations?
Well, I'll answer this one. It's basically software setups. I'll often go through and show cases that have worked well and cases that haven't worked well. And the software setups that I did 10 years ago, 5 years ago, are completely different to what I would do now, and showing that even though I got a result without a refinement and an amazing result, it was actually the compliance that trumped, not the actual software setup. So it's breaking down the lessons learned, if you like, trying to cram into a day or 2 day training or online platform to show that these cases, it is overwhelming. The data that you're looking at as when you're first starting out is trying to find how to make it more predictable and less risk adverse. So you're going through cases to show, yes, this worked, but it shouldn't have, or trying to quantify how to play safer in terms of the alignment and movement of the teeth, intra-arch or tooth by tooth. So we go through cases for that very experience, be able to show class 2 cases, class 3 cases, anterior open bite, deep bite, or just basic facial aesthetic cases or relapse cases of fixed ortho, and showing what can go right, what can go wrong from a software perspective, and monitoring the treatment perspective. Because like George said, compliance is king. I don't care how good your software is, if you don't have a patient who's on board and is going to be committed and compliant and understand their responsibility, it's going to fail. Right, and if it fails and you haven't communicated properly, it's on yours, your head, not theirs, because the first thing they're going to do is blame you. So I think they're the two aspects that you try and go through for someone who's starting out and get them to understand what they're looking at. And they're not just looking at the occlusion, whether it's class 3 or 2 or 1. It's looking at the software in relation – sorry, looking at the dentition in relation to the patient's face and their smile, and saying, what does the patient not happy with? And this is obviously, we're talking about when you're starting out with clear aligners on an adult patient. You know, we focus on that in terms of that training, and looking at how to play safe and obviously ensure that the clinicians continue that learning path. We haven't got all the answers. We don't profess to do that. But you want to learn from as many people as you can, because it's I'm still learning. I'm not here to profess that I know all the answers. But I know what I'm doing now will be different in a year's time, and you keep improving as best you can.
I like the analogy, George, about the glasses, and if you don't wear them, they don't work. I think that's a great one actually to use with patients. Do you use, is that part of your discussion?
Yeah, it's like Vertebrum. It's like I can turn a switch and I say the same thing every time.
That's awesome. I love it. So there's a lot of people listening who have never done an Alana case in their life and they'd like to get involved. What's the most responsible way to take the steps towards getting involved in Alana therapy?
Do it. It'll be the best decision you have. Your patients will love you for it. You have to, the first step would be A, to make a commitment to a lifelong learning of it. The second one would be to make a commitment to understand what cases you should pick and what cases you shouldn't pick. Those are the first two commitments I'd do. After that, I'd be turning around and say, let's do an accreditation program. And then from there, once you actually have committed to Alana therapy, start looking at education programs and look at education programs that teach you what to do, but also teach you what not to do as well. We've all been on the trajectory of, and it's probably a shift in dentistry now that's happened, and where a lot of providers or teachers used to always show you everything that worked. And thankfully now there's been a shift to things that also don't work. So, you know, the old adage of if you see somebody else put their hand in fire, you know not to do it yourself because you've just seen them get burnt. At the end of the day, sometimes you still put your hand in fire to just to make sure, but you don't fully burn your hand. So be around people that are willing to show you things that work, because at the end of the day, when someone finds out that something works, they try and hide it. And that's one of the things I'm really grateful to John, because a lot of the things that he does works and he's never hidden it from anyone. And that's something that I'm proud to be a part of Aorta, because at the end of the day, he shows what works. But it's also show people that what doesn't work as well, because at the end of the day, if we're sitting there as education providers only showing what works, we're again leading people down the wrong path. So go to an educated provider that will show you that what doesn't work as well. And I think the one that I learned from John was start your first case on someone that you know, so you can get constant feedback from them and also track it. And that way, you know, they're not going to sue you either.
Yeah, that's fair enough. The same for implants or sounds like a good plan.
I think I was going to say the one thing to add to that too from George is, confidence is key. You need to be appearing confident, even though you may not have any clue and any idea. Patients feed on it. You know, whatever you're doing, if you're sitting there procrastinating about removing a wisdom tooth, the patient feeds off it. So that you've got to exude that confidence. You've got to build that confidence from within, and finding a good mentor, you know, locally, online, whatever it is, you need to be able to have someone you can constantly refer. And there's many out there doing and helping and providing it. We're quite lucky compared to when I started. So you really want to make sure you're working on your confidence and you've got someone in your corner when you need to ask for help.
And the last one is become an ACUS member.
Yeah, definitely. There will definitely be links to all that stuff in the show notes. I think you make a good point. ACUS, as it's independent. It's a broad range of information. And like someone like myself, I'm very, very early on in my journey, and it's good. It's eye-opening. It's inspiring. So, I can be a proponent for sure. You talk about communication. I want you to kind of elaborate a bit more, because this is a really important thing when we're talking about aesthetics. We're communicating risks and the benefits and the need to wear it. Do you have any other specific tips or situations, things people should say or think about, when they're communicating with clear aligners and their patients?
Yeah, look, I think the most important thing that we constantly advocate, and we've been doing from the beginning with the 4,000 cases, is be transparent, create that emotional connection, use the software to demonstrate what you're hoping to, you know, digitally simulate into their mouths. I think it creates it motivates the patient. Don't talk about words, just focus on the image in front of them and talk to them and how it's going to work, how they've got to be committed. We show our patients before we start at the first visit and during every stage they come in. The software is on the screen as they come in to track and see how they're going. So the software is a very powerful tool. The technology and engaging with the patient and creating that emotional connection has been an underlying facet of what we do. So I can't reiterate that enough, is to have that ability to discuss the case openly. I'm amazed how many times we get cases that are referred to us from all over the world and the patient sees the software for the first time. It's almost like it's hidden because clinicians fear they're going to be hard to account. It's the opposite. because it does two things. It creates a relationship of trust with the patient. You're not hiding anything, you're transparent. And secondly, if the patient then starts demonstrating unrealistic expectations, then of course you refer them to your favorite orthodontist who's a non-ACAS member.
I broadcast so that one widely.
It's the ability to communicate, and I think it's important. We shouldn't shy away. I think DSD does that well with veneers, and I think the clear aligner landscape works well when you can show something to the patient, and that's why Smile Direct Club's tapped into it. They know they're showing a perception of trust because the patient sees the software. They don't commit till they say, yes, that's what I want.
And it's a fantastic consent tool, isn't it, as well, because you're showing the patient what you propose to be the end result. So it's a fantastic consent tool as well.
Do you have any like little metaphors or things you use, George or John, that help describe any of these things, like the glasses and wearing them?
Yeah, look, I think my favourite is with any patient, you know, clear aligners is only going to work when you wear it. Half the battle is moving them. Half the battle is retaining them. So they understand it's for life, retention for life. So whether they think it's not, you know, half the cases we do are fixed, you know, relapse cases where the message didn't get through about the retention phase, right? With all those that have worn braces, I've worn braces, you don't remember ever hearing that retainers were for life. So it's an important message to get through. It's half wearing it, half maintaining it. Any other ones, George?
I always use clear aligners as a domino effect. Number one has to fit for number two to fit. Number two has to fit to number three to fit. If you take one of the dominoes out, the whole cycle stops, and it delays your whole treatment. The other analogy I always use is think of clear aligners a bit like your gym work. If you're carrying 8 kilo weights today, next week you're carrying 10 kilo weights. The week after that, you're carrying 12 and so on. If you skip 4 weeks of gym, you're not going to find yourself still at 16 kilo weights. You're going to have to go back down to 8 kilo weights.
That's great.
I always say it's all sequential, and you're only hurting yourself, and you're delaying your own treatment. And I always say, if you're not ready for the commitment, don't go ahead with treatment. At the end of the day, the honest truth is, patients come in wanting this treatment. That's what I was saying. Get ready. If you're not already doing it, get yourself ready to do it. Get your practice ready to do it, because patients come in asking for it. We don't sit there telling, when you hear about John talking about 4,000 cases, we're not sitting there in the practice with everybody that comes in for a clean saying, oh, you need Invisalign, or you need clear aligners, or your teeth look really, really bad. They come in for us saying, we want these aligned, or we ask them a simple question of, are you happy with your teeth? So if you're not currently doing it, get ready to do it. Because people want to come in doing it, but also warn them that a lot of the treatment outcomes is based on their compliance, and that's where all these analogies come in.
Yeah, absolutely. They're so good. I'm going to use every single one of them. I appreciate them. let's tie this up a bit, and I want you guys to think back to the start of your career. Imagine, you know, because we're talking with a lot of students, graduates, young dentists in general here. If you could go back and change something early in your career to get to where you are faster and better, or with less mistakes, what would you change? What would you do?
For less mistakes, I think that's the wrong attitude to have. You're going to make mistakes. It's how you deal with those mistakes. Your mindset is going to be what's going to change, not less mistakes. You want to make mistakes. You need to make mistakes. You have to make mistakes. Embrace mistakes. Right, because you're not going to become a clinician. Give me a clinician who's never made a mistake, and I'll give you someone who's never treated a patient. So you're going to have to do that, but it's how you manage that. It's stressful. Let's not make a mistake. We know it's stressful, and being 20 years plus, you remember those cases that failed. You rarely remember the ones that go well. So you need to use these as examples to learn and grow stronger from them. And share them with your colleagues. Don't be afraid to share. The problem is in our profession, we don't share mistakes. It's almost like you can't make a mistake. And I think it's the mentality for a long time in our profession that you are shown what you should do and what you can't do because you're going to fail. And I think that's been a mindset, and I can appreciate why, to protect the public to some extent. But at the same time, we're not going to have clinicians who are going to improve their skill set. At the end of the day, no matter how good your academic results are, how good you are in theory, until you get your hands going and doing dentistry, you're not going to be any good. You can talk, you can sell whatever you think you can sell, but bottom line, you need to make sure your hands are equipped to be able to manage whatever you want to be doing. And do what you enjoy is the other thing too. You know, end of the day, you can't be good at everything in dentistry. So focus on what you enjoy and start that as a premise.
Yeah, I think that learning from your mistakes, and that mistakes are how we got to where we are now, is a beautiful mindset and a really important mindset as well. Do you have anything to add to that, George, or does that sum it up for you as well?
I think that sums it up. The one thing I'd say is try to limit the big mistakes. We're all going to make mistakes, but hopefully there's small mistakes. Try to limit the big mistakes, and that's by putting safeguards around you, all the way around your practice. We're going to make small mistakes. Try to limit the big ones. And the second one would be, do everything in your power not to make the same mistake twice.
Learn from your mistakes. Yep.
Learn from your mistakes. That's what we want from our staff. That's what we should want from ourselves. That's great. I want you guys to imagine you could get in the ear of every single dentist who's in their final year or just graduated. Every single one, you can teach them one thing. What would that one thing be that they need to be successful in dentistry? It can't just be aligners. It has to be specific.
I said this earlier in this podcast. Treat your patients with the same respect that you would treat your family and friends. You can't go wrong if that's your mindset.
Simple and absolutely true. George?
Dentistry is really, really hard, but have a lot of fun with it.
Enjoy it. Otherwise, if you're not enjoying it, it's not too late to start again, something else. You want to be able to enjoy what you do. We do make a difference in patients' lives, community. So you want to enjoy what you do.
Absolutely. It's something that we're lucky to be in the profession we're in. And I think there's many aspects of dentistry, and we can start to focus on the ones that make us happy, and we'll go home happy. That's great. I want to thank you both, Dr. John, Dr. George from ACAS and AORTA. I appreciate your time. You've really given us a lot today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David. Pleasure.
Thanks, David. And I would say, just before we cut off here, congratulations on everything you're doing. I know a lot of students, a lot of new graduates, and even experienced dentists are really listening into what you're doing. So congratulations, keep doing it. We know you're passionate about it, you're very good at it, and I think people get a lot of value out of it. And so keep doing it, and I hope that everybody keeps encouraging you to keep doing it as well.
Well, George, I really appreciate that, and thank you to everyone out there who does listen and share it and tell their friends, because it's a whole bunch of fun. So thanks, cool. Guys.
Look, especially with this time of COVID, you know, I think we're all going to stay strong and stay positive, and what better way to pass the time with your podcast. So keep up the great work.
Thank you. CPD is expensive. Travel, time away from work, hotels, it all adds up. Imagine being able to see the content from world-renowned speakers from all over the globe. Learn about restorative, full mouth work, communication, surgery, and tons more, all from the comfort of your own home. No travel costs, no hotels. That all exists and is getting better every day on the RIPE Academy from Restoring Excellence. For just $29 per month, you'll get access to some of the best online content and save thousands on the real life course equivalents. In fact, if you look really closely, you'll actually see me on there. I paid thousands for that course, it was awesome, and now it's just $29 a month to see the same stuff. Find out more on the RIPE Dentistry Group or at restoringexcellence.com. Thank you so much to John and George for spending their time with us in the Dental Head Start podcast. They're also doing a lot to try and help us through this COVID shutdown, with AORTA doing free webinars weekly until the shutdown lifts. So check them out, aortaaustralia.com.au. Now, I mentioned at the start of the podcast, with Prime Practice, they've got the Prime Vision Conference coming up in June 2020. And this conference, I think, is going to be so useful, because it's obviously at a time where we're all at a bit of a juncture. We're all in a difficult situation, whether we're practice owners or graduates or even students. We need to know where the future lies and where we're going with dentistry and rebuilding our practices. This conference is packed with speakers that will really give us value in this time, but there are also some of them have been on the podcast. We've got Dr. Jamie Workman, Dr. Dean Larson-Blatt, Steve Durgin, Brett Jernan, and Philip Palmer are all been on the podcast before, so you know them well. Check out the link in the show notes to learn more about the Prime Vision Conference 2020. But now we have Patrick Moberger on the Prime Head Start segment, and he's talking about should dentists talk about money? Interesting episode. I hope you get some value out of this. Welcome to the Prime Head Start segment, proudly brought to you by Prime Practice. Today we're joined with Patrick Moberger. How are you today, Patrick?
I'm really well, thank you. How are you, David?
Fantastic, thank you. And thank you for joining us. Of course, we've heard you here on the Prime Head Start segment a few times, and we appreciate your time again. Today, I want to talk a little bit about that discussion about prices and money and costs with our patients. Should we be doing that discussion?
Yep. And that's the short answer to that one. There is a reason why I say yes. There are so many dentists out there who feel extremely uncomfortable talking about money.
Yeah.
And they feel that I'm a health professional. I'm not the money maker here. I'm not the one who's supposed to be talking about money. But if they put themselves in the shoes of the patient, and if they say that I'm going through a number of different options with you for treatment, and at a very different, three different, very different price structures. If the patient is asking you, so what? So how much is this going to cost me, David? And your response is, I really don't talk about money. I will let Sarah in the front office. She can look after that, and she can take you through all the different financial arrangements for us. As a patient, when I hear that, that's a bit weird. It's like I'm going and buying a suit, and I have three different suits laid out in front of me at David Jones. And I said, so what's the price difference? And they said, don't really talk about money. You can talk about the money side with the cashier. And I said, that's really weird. Why don't you just give me a ballpark figure? So I think that's the tip. If you are talking to a patient about different treatment options, at least give the patient a ballpark figure, not a quote, but just a ballpark figure, because you all know that things can happen during the whole sequence of treatment, and it can become a different price structure in the end if something goes wrong. So, but at least give a ballpark figure. Write it down on a piece of paper when you talk to the patient about the different options. Talk about both the pros and the cons with the different treatment options. Write down some ballpark figures, take a few photographs so the patient has something to bring home to their spouse or to their family when they're going to talk about what's going to happen next. In prime speak, we call it scratch pad review, and we spend quite a lot of time in trying to understand the scratch pad review. But I normally let the dentist know, when you write a scratch pad with the different options, write down ballpark figures there as well. Doesn't mean that the patient is going to try to hold you accountable to anything, but it's more honest. The other thing that I was thinking about, David, that some patients say, it sounds very expensive. That's a trap, because I've heard so many dentists going in and trying to almost justify why it's so expensive. Do you understand what it costs to run a business like a dental business? Do you understand what it costs to have a CEREC machine? Do you understand how much it costs with a cone beam? And instead of going in and trying to justify things like that, patients don't really care about that, to be honest. Just go in and align with the patient, empathize with them and agree. If the patient says, oh, it's really expensive, just go in and agree. Just say, yep. Dentistry in Australia is very expensive. In many countries, it is really, really very expensive. Then try to steer the conversation away from cost to value. Do you see what I mean? So instead of just focusing on the cost, try to get it into value. And one way of doing that is to ask the patient, so when you choose a dentist, I guess the cost of treatment is the most important thing for you. Is that right? And you've almost polarized it, so the patient feels, no, of course not. Okay, that's good for me to know as a dentist. Is there anything else that is important for you? Yeah, I guess that I feel welcome, and if I'm nervous, that I'm being calmed down. Okay, that's good for us to know. Is there anything else that is important for you? Yeah, I want technology. I want everything to be done in one hit. I don't want to come back for several appointments. Okay, that's good for us to know as well. Can you hear what I'm doing, David?
Absolutely.
I'm steering the conversation away from focusing on the cost of the treatment to the value of the treatment instead. And in the end, the patient hears that, okay, so they can offer the warmth, the friendliness, help me if I'm nervous. They have the latest technology. Okay, I get it now.
So often a patient doesn't have very much else to compare us on but price if they're not thinking in those terms. So if you start helping them think in the terms of what value you are actually providing for them, you can help open up their mind to what's happening.
I totally agree. And when patients say, I'll think about it because they think it's too expensive, and they say, oh, that's a little bit too much, very often that is an excuse for lack of trust with the clinician. Yeah. So they don't ever want to say right in your face, hey, David, I don't trust you. I don't like you. So I rather want to go now. They would never do that. I would never. I no one would do that. But they rather use the excuse, that's too expensive. I'll have to think about that. And we all know that that means they're not going to come back again. So when you hear that they think it's too expensive, very often it is because there is that sense of trust is missing for the patient. So start getting the trust happening. And when they still talk about expenses, agree with them, align with them, and then steer the conversation away towards value instead of cost of treatment.
They're such fantastic tips. And I guess one of the things that we always come back to in these is that trust is the foundation of everything in our communication, our treatment planning, and our case acceptance. I think you raise a really good point. If you're at David Jones, you're buying a suit, you had three suits, they wouldn't tell you the price, I wouldn't be making a purchase. And I think that really sums it up pretty
That's really crazy. And dentists, it's a very common thing that dentists just feel it's not my role to talk about money. Yes, it is actually. It's your role to talk about, but you don't have to give exact quotes. You can leave that to a treatment coordinator, but at least talk about ballpark figures. Speak with confidence and a smile in your voice. The moment that you start getting nervous about dentistry being expensive, that's when discounts start happening. Red alert on that one. And if you are an owner, and if you give discounts to, you know, family members or whoever gets a discount, at least create a discount policy that everyone in the practice is aware of. Otherwise, it becomes really weird that the dentist has promised a discount in the treatment room and the reception don't have a clue what you're talking about right now. It becomes embarrassing. But I would probably stay away from discounts full stop.
Yeah, that's good advice and something I've seen from my experience that it can affect you. And it's usually a confidence issue as well. Patrick, thank you so much for sharing. This is a jam-packed Prime Head Start segment, and thank you, Prime Practice, for sharing that with us.
That's perfectly all right. My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to the Dental Head Start podcast. I genuinely hope this is helping you become a better dentist. So if you like what you're hearing, make sure you subscribe on your podcast player. And I want you to do me a favor. I want you to go to social media and share something that you've appreciated from us with one of your friends. That's how the word gets out. That's how more people gain and benefit from what we're doing. And if you're a dental student or a graduate and you want to get a head start, go to dentalheadstart.com to find everything we're doing to help dental students become great dentists.